Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith, and hope. Discover more interviews at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Psychologist and author Stan Tatkin specializes in relationships. Over the past 15 years, he's developed an approach to relationship counseling that harnesses research in neuroscience, attachment theory, and the biology of arousal. The approach is called PACT. It stands for Psychobiological Approach to Couple Therapy. Stan Tatkin recently visited Australia to train other practitioners in the technique. When did you first start to connect for yourself the link between our neurobiology and our psychology and indeed relationships?
Well, I did that some years ago, probably just because I wanted to wrangle my own mind. But I studied with my mentor, Alan Shore, neuroscience and arousal regulation. And I'd already been studying infants and infant caregiver pairs. So making the leap to couples and the neurobiology of couples was not that hard. And that's what brought me basically to what is psychobiology, the study of the brain and the body.
Hmm. Now, Christians are fond of saying that we've been made in a way that we're hardwired to connect with each other, something along the lines, you know, the theology would say that something along the lines of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, that they're community, that God reaches out to us through his Son, and so on. You're saying, in fact, that we are indeed hardwired. You may use those or different words, but we're hardwired in a way that our neurobiology wants us to connect with others.
Yeah, well, we're hardwired in lots and lots of ways. One of them is to pair bond or to find somebody to mate with, ostensibly for, you know, procreation, continuation of the species. But it's even more than that. In the mammalian world, not all mammals do this, but many pair bond in order to protect each other from the environment, from predators, and to protect their offspring. Human beings are the same. We are group animals. We travel in herds, but we pair bond within those herds. We become very dyadic. And so, yes, we are wired for what is technically called primary attachment relationships, meaning a special interdependent relationship with at least one other person.
And hardwired here means not just emotionally, psychologically connected, although those things, but as a consequence of something happening in the chemistry of our brain?
Well, we are, in a sense, biologically driven to be with others. We're interactional animals, and we have to interact. But when we do meet someone and that person is exciting us, they don't necessarily have to be a romantic interest, but the brain loves novelty. If the person is of a romantic interest, then there are certain neurochemicals that are involved that basically alters our perception and allows us to, you know, fester or perseverate or obsess around that person, at least in the beginning during a certain phase of courtship.
Yeah. Now, so you've said, for instance, that in order to make a marriage more successful, one of the strategies there that works with our biology is to create what you've called a couple bubble.
Right.
Tell me about that.
Well, the couple bubble is the idea that my partner and I, my wife and I, have each other's backs. We're in the foxhole together. We're experts on each other. We protect each other in public and private. We tell each other everything, and we're the first to know. This idea of a couple bubble is it's for self-preservation because we are interdepending on one another to survive this life. And so that takes a certain amount of emphasis and attention in order to see each other as the top of the food chain, the roof of the house, king and queen, basically the leaders. Yeah. And so there's a certain duty to that in order to make sure that we are taking care of each other properly, yes.
Just as a matter of interest, you've used the word dyadic. You could also use the word binary, I suppose. Is it strongest in a couple?
It is strongest in a couple, that is true. We go from basically from twos to threes, even in infancy. We think we're born alone, but we're not. We're never born alone. So we go from twos to threes and from threes to more, but we're always we always tend to pair bond. We tend to find at least one other person, even in a herd, even in a group, and that person is primary. This person is the one that we call, go to when we're in the most distress or when we want to celebrate something. That's the person we call or contact.
So what does that say to people who are alone?
Well, there are a lot of very happy people who are alone. As long as they have a network, as long as they are socially connected to somebody, then they're fine. There are plenty of happy people that way. However, we worry about people who are socially isolated. Just like couples, if they're socially isolated, they're worrisome as well. They can fall into something called a folie à deux, which is very similar to what a person in isolation will do. They become mad. They become crazy. So, single or not single, it's very important to have friendships. Very important to have people that you can depend on. Otherwise, we don't do well as human beings.
Mm. Well, then we often don't do well in relationships. Let's call that. So,
That's true.
There's some helpful advice that's come from your own reflections.
Yeah.
And one of those speaks volumes to our busy lives today.
Yeah.
That is to say that we need to be careful to not drift apart in time.
Yes.
But you've got some ideas on how that should happen.
Well, if couples who are too alone, in other words, we call them one-person psychological systems. These are people who don't know how to work collaboratively, don't know how to lean on each other and use each other properly. People who do too much parallel play, that is, they're doing something similar or different together in the same room, but they're not connecting, those people will drift. Those people will end up, at least one of them, will end up feeling terribly lonely. So as long as people are interacting face-to-face, eye-to-eye, skin-to-skin, or using a third thing, person, a vista, something novel, something to bring about exciting love again and again, those people will do well. People who know exactly how to use third things to amplify each other and make the relationship exciting again, that addictive kind of love that we call exciting love, that's very important for the long run.
Is one of those third things what you've suggested as a reunion ritual?
Well, a reunion ritual would be paying attention to the fact that when we come inside or outside, home, not home, going to sleep, waking up, all of those transition times are separations and reunions. Human beings and primates have trouble with separations and reunions, whether people know it or not. And couples would do well to have a ritual of reuniting when coming home from outside, which is basically an embrace or gazing into each other's eyes, and particularly put each other to bed at night and wake up together in the morning. This is actually quite key, especially for people who don't have a lot of time during the day because they're busy. The nighttime and the morning, very important times for children and adults. We put each other to bed, and that sets the tone for sleep and for the next morning.
Mm. Now, you said that partners need to also learn to fight well.
Yes.
Okay. Let's get your top three tips on fighting well.
Well,
wouldn't it be number one, avoid the fight?
No, there's no avoiding. In fact, people who are conflict avoiding tend to be more threatening than average folk. That's because the person who's conflict avoidant is not engaging with their partner properly. So engage fully, but here's the formula. We must learn how to take care of ourselves and the other person at the same time. So it has to be good for me, good for you, win-win situations. So partners may have conflict, but they both understand that they have to move as quickly as possible to mutual relief and to get what they want by understanding what their partner wants. This is the basic rule of all negotiation, right? Bargaining is, I know what you're afraid of and I know what you want, and I assure you that I'm going to respect that. At the same time, I'm also going to assert what I want and what I'm afraid of. So that's rule number one. Rule number two is, if you're going to be in conflict, do so face-to-face, eye-to-eye, in close proximity. This is the way the brain is built, and if we do it any other way, we're going to get into trouble, including if we're side-by-side, because we're legally blind on the sides. So that's rule number two. Rule number three is, whatever misunderstanding there is, which there is going to be, there's quick repair. People have to learn how to fall on their sword and decide whether the relationship is more important or being right is more important. Of course, being right, if that's more important, everyone's going to lose for sure.
Wow. I feel that we're just skimming across the top of such important issues, but I do want to go just a little bit deeper,
Finally,
on one other thing. Often in our culture we speak about languages of love languages, to learn your partner's love language. In my case, one of the love languages is gardening, and my wife loves it when we can garden together. So, you know, it's something I had to actually learn to appreciate. Dirt under my fingernails, but I do my best. I actually came to enjoy it. I really enjoy our time.
That's nice.
So we've enhanced each other, which is how it should be. But you've called what you've called attachment style?
Well, no, actually, that is the third thing I was talking about. You both are doing something that amplifies the two of you. It's a similar activity, and you're using it as a way to join each other. That's the example of using a third thing, a child, a puppy, gardening together, whatever it is. The attachment styles has to do with our orientation from childhood, based on the culture we grew up in. And where this is most important, because I know we only have so much time here, is our memory about what happens when we depend on somebody. And that carries through into adult relationships, romantic relationships. So in my childhood culture, if relationship didn't come first, then something else comes first. And that would be either self-esteem, performance, appearance, or having to take care of at least one of my parents' emotional state. If that happens, then I go through life fearing either abandonment or having my things taken from me, myself stolen from me, engulfment, all of that stuff. So it is a memory, because we're all memory. That's how we actually exist, as memory. Mm. As soon as I start to depend on a partner, I begin to remember all the things that happened that aren't so good about depending on anybody. And then I behave in a way, or in certain ways, that is difficult, right, to be in relationship. It doesn't mean I don't want to be. I need to be. I'm just afraid that this thing will happen again because I have real experience of it. Wow. So attachment style has to do with being insecure with somebody that you depend on. And since love relationships recreate the same experience in childhood, that's why they're so hard.
That's not to say, though, that we'll always parent in the way in which we were parented, I presume, because
no.
Then you just have disaster repeating, potentially great repeating great, or...
Yeah.
Yeah.
We strive to be better than our parents most of the time. Some people actually get worse, but most of us want to be better, and even those who are better, we have to remember we are what we know, and what we know is what we've experienced, and that's about as fancy as we get. So under stress, we are going to do exactly what we don't want to do. That's everybody. And so, yes, we want to be different than our parents, but since we are automatic animals, mostly operating by memory, when we're under stress, we're going to fall back on what we've experienced in the past, and we just have to cut ourselves a break on that one.
Where does your hope lie?
My hope lies in the human mind and the spirit and the need for people to be with people.
Yes.
In the end, it's really, I hate to sound syrupy about it, but in the end, all we really care about are the relationships and the people that we love, and we either find those relationships in disrepair, which is very sad at the end of life, or we've learned to nurture them and to respect them and to make sure that all our relationships, the ones we want, are in good order. And I think that's very much built into the human psyche, into the human wiring. So that's what gives me hope. But we do have a brain that's built more for war than for love, and we can see that in operation throughout history and every day.
Stan Tatkin, whose TED Talk is called Relationships Are Hard, But Why? And who's authored several books, including Wired for Love, How Understanding Your Partner's Brain and Attachment Style Can Help You Defuse Conflict and Build a Secure Relationship.